Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass. Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. Here we are. It's October 22nd, 2013. It's kind of a nice autumn in New York kind of day. And I just like breathing all that crisp, fresh air and thinking about all the wonderful fall foods that there are for us to enjoy, all those fall plant foods, right? Okay, today is a power-packed show. We're going to be talking to some wonderful doctors, and I want to get started because the information that we are going to hear about is so very important. My first guest is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the president and founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. His research has been published in Scientific American, the American Journal of Cardiology, and other major journals. He is the author of 6 previous books, including Food That Fight Pain and Food for Life, a frequent lecturer appearing across the country, and adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. He lives in Washington, D.C. He has a wonderful new book out called Power Foods for the Brain, and we're going to be talking about that right now. Welcome to It's All About Food, Dr. Barnard.
Hi, it's great to be with you today.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you've been doing for decades now. You've made a major contribution in making this world a better place, and I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, that's nice of you to say. We're not done yet.
There's so much work to do. And that's why we need to keep our brains sharp.
That's right, we do. And a lot of people, when they're stacking up their breakfast, they don't realize that it could affect not only how they feel during the day, you know, that kind of brain fog that some people have, that could be affected by your food, but also the long-term risks, like the poor memory that some folks get when they're older, or even something as serious as Alzheimer's disease. Research has shown very strong links with what we eat, and so I wrote Power Foods for the Brain to try to help people to understand how that works and what the science is behind it.
Now, all diseases are unpleasant and scary. I think Alzheimer's and dementia are probably the scariest, in my opinion, just because losing our minds, and what else is there when we lose our minds, and it's so hard for our family and friends to cope with. And it seems like after reading your book, there's a great deal of hope. Can we really avoid dementia and Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I think we can, to a very substantial degree. And just so that people are clear with the terms, dementia means the loss of mental function. Your memory's not good, but it's a generic term. And the most common type of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. And there are other types, like you could have a stroke, where part of the brain is destroyed, and so your memory is poor for that reason, or Parkinson's disease or other conditions can cause poor memory. But the most common cause is Alzheimer's. And yes, there's a lot that we can do about it. Research has looked at what people eat, and there are certain dietary patterns that are linked with a higher risk and other dietary patterns that are linked with a dramatically lower risk. And so that's all we need to do is kind of plug that in, plus other parts of lifestyle like exercise that play roles as well.
Well, I'm interested, the more I read about Alzheimer's, is this thing with the plaque in the brain. And we're learning more about heart disease and diabetes and how plaque in the arteries can have such a detrimental effect. But I'm not surprised that plaque in the brain as well can be caused by certain foods.
Yes. Now, plaque is just a generic word. Your dentist might say, well, you have plaque on your teeth. Mm-hmm. It just means a collection of something. And in your arteries, there are what are called atherosclerotic plaques. And if you were to open a person's coronary arteries and look inside, you would see them. They look a bit like chewing gum, except their heart is a rock, and that's atherosclerotic plaque. Inside the brain, it's different. These plaques or collections are microscopic, little round blobs that look sort of like meatballs or balls of yarn, and they are collections of protein that have developed in the brain. But they are not normal. They shouldn't be there. And we now know a bit about how foods might cause them to collect.
Okay, so let's talk about a few of them. My favorite foods, meat and dairy. Not...
Right. Well, in Chicago, a research study got started in 1993, 20 years ago. And they tracked what people ate over time, and 10 years later, in 2003, they published some astounding findings that people who tended to tuck into bacon, cheese, the foods that are high in saturated fat, that seemed to be an issue. Saturated fat is solid fat. It's mostly in, well, dairy products are the number one source. Cheese, whole milk, and so forth. Meat is the second source, also eggs. And the people who ate the most saturated fat had 2 to 3 times the risk of Alzheimer's disease compared to people who ate the least. And then secondly, trans fats, which are the hardened oils that are used in donuts and sometimes fryer grease, shortening, you could call it. The people who tended to eat that had probably 3 to 5 times the risk of Alzheimer's disease compared to people who ate the least. So you put those two things together. The bad fats really increase risk. But then they looked further and they found there are certain things that reduce risk as well.
Now, I'm a vegan. I've been a vegan for 25 years. I encourage everyone to fall in love with plants. But I'm continually hearing all different kinds of things. And many nutritionist doctors recommend low-fat dairy. So would that be okay?
Well, it doesn't have the saturated fat in it, but if you skim the fat off of out of milk, the number one nutrient left in it is sugar. It's lactose sugar is the main nutrient that's in skim milk, and which is why the calorie content of cow's milk is very similar to a typical soda.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of sugar, but it's still there, and it's there to make the calf fat and to give energy to the growing calf, but it's not there for us adult humans. It's not the point of it, so we're better off avoiding it.
Okay. Now, some of the scary things that I read about, there are things that we thought were important nutrients like iron and things that are being added into our food like breakfast cereals that aren't good for us.
Well, you do need a little bit of iron in your diet. There's no question about that. You need it for healthy hemoglobin in your red blood cells that lets them carry oxygen. However, iron is a double-edged sword. If you don't have enough, you'll be anemic. If you have too much, you're iron overloaded. And in the brain, the iron appears to oxidize. It rusts, in essence, and that causes the creation of free radicals that can damage the brain. Copper is very similar. You need copper for enzymes in the body, but if you have too much, it oxidizes too. Think of a penny that as it gets older, it corrodes and turns dark. That oxidation process happens in your body too.
So we need a little, but not too much.
Not too much, and it's easy to get too much. If you grew up the way I did in a meaty kind of diet, that sort of environment is going to lead you to overdose, unfortunately.
Mm.
And many people do. Let's say, what are the sources of copper? It's not just the copper pipes that you might have. Shellfish, like lobster, crab, shrimp, loaded with copper, and something like liver is high in both copper and iron, and it really has levels that are, I would say, toxic.
I remember as a kid we used to always say liver makes you live, but I don't think so.
No, keep in mind what the liver's keep in mind what the job is of the liver. Your liver's got a rough job. It's there to clean toxins out of your blood.
Yeah.
So if you're eating a pig's liver, a chicken's liver, a cow's liver, you're eating it's basically like tearing open your air conditioner and eating its filter.
Mm.
That's where all the junk is. So no, and frankly, people shouldn't be eating animal products in any way, shape, or form. We are not natural carnivores, but those who do seem to relish these particularly unhealthy parts of the animal.
Okay, there was something that I read about that I loved reading about that I didn't know about, and that is I've read many times over the years about the difference of the kinds of iron, plant iron, non-heme iron, and the animal iron, the iron we get from animal foods, and how they were different and how the plant-based one was, some would say, less absorbable. But in your book, I learned how that's a good thing sometimes, that the plant-based iron really works with us.
Well, right. We're designed for plant-based iron. If you consume green leafy vegetables, for example, spinach or broccoli or any of the others, they have non-heme iron. That's a special form that is more absorbable if you need it, but less absorbable if you already have a lot of iron on board already. That's your body's homeostatic mechanism for maintaining iron balance. The iron that's in meat is to a large degree heme iron, and that defies your body's ability to control it. And people are not meat eaters by nature, and if you eat meat, your risk of becoming iron overloaded is very high.
I mean, how lovely is that about iron?
Well, it's the human body adapted to the plants that were around it. And that's why we can absorb iron from plant-based foods, and we can keep it out if we've got too much. That's also why when you go into the produce counter, the red color of a tomato, the green color of greens, the orange color of a carrot, that's beta-carotene, what your retina can see is the nutrients in these foods at a great distance. You see the lycopene in a tomato, it registers on the retina as bright red. The anthocyanins, which are also antioxidants in blueberries and grapes, that registers in your brain as deep purple colors. Our bodies are designed to seek out and take advantage of the nutrients in plant foods, and we just take that for granted. Aren't the tomatoes pretty? Well, not just pretty. That's the lycopene that's an antioxidant screaming out at you to eat it. So we have adapted these abilities to detect delicious, healthful foods and also to be repelled by other things. Fish doesn't smell so hot. If you go into the meat counter, nobody's going to say, what a lovely aroma. It stinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that is nature trying to tell you to get away from those foods.
Okay, I just got a question from a listener, and I'm going to ask you. She writes, my dad was a slim, healthy eater all his life, got plenty of omega-3s, ate mostly fruits and vegetables, especially blueberries, drank red wine, ran marathons well into his late 70s, was a scholar, a New York Times crossword puzzler, an active lawyer, until Alzheimer's robbed him of his skills around the same time he died at 84. 5 years after his diagnosis, his mother and father had it. A younger sister also had it. And she's asking, so if they all had it, why should she think that she could avoid it?
Okay, well, first of all, that's a terrific question, but I'm very, very sorry for your loss. It's a horrible thing to see a family member start to get this condition where everything that ever mattered to them is ripped away bit by bit. And when you see this happen to a family member, you would trade it for just any other, give me any disease other than Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is a gene called the APOE epsilon 4 allele. And if you've got it from one parent, your risk of Alzheimer's is tripled. If you got it from both parents, it's multiplied by a factor of 10 to 15. So
wow.
Some people have considered that a death sentence. It is not. We have learned what that gene does. What the gene does is it does not cause Alzheimer's. What it does is it causes a protein to be formed in the body, a carrier protein, that escorts cholesterol from place to place. And if people avoid animal products, if they're not making much cholesterol, and they're not eating cholesterol, and they're not eating the saturated fat or the trans fats at all, their risk of memory problems later in life plummets dramatically. There are genes for lung cancer, but if you don't smoke, you may never get it. So we should all assume that we're at risk, whatever your genes may be, and that what we need to do is then to get the animal products out of our diet completely. You already knew you wanted to do that for your heart and for your waistline and, frankly, for the animals' benefit and for a better earth. And there's every single reason to build your diet from grains and beans and vegetables and fruits, but Alzheimer's is the latest reason for that. And in researchers in Finland looked at people who had were around age 50 and they were all reasonably healthy. Those who avoided saturated fats had an 80% reduction in their risk of memory problems in later life, even when they had the genes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a reason to not fool around with this. It's a reason to make a big change in your diet. In the same way as a smoker does not fool around, you don't sort of cut down. You throw the cigarettes away.
Right.
If you're a meat eater, if you're eating animal products, get away from them. And a healthy diet is four groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, and take vitamin B12, which your brain needs. If you do those things, those four food groups and that B12 supplement, you've got 98% of it licked.
I love the way my plate looks a lot like a PCRM's plate.
Yeah, well,
did
it was 2009.
Did you have some secret representative in the government pushing?
No. I mean, it was 2009. PCRM, my group, the Physicians Committee, went to the USDA, and we said the pyramid is a nice shape, but nobody eats from a pyramid. We need to be more literal and make a plate. And so we sent them the what we call the power plate. It was a plate divided into four quadrants. And we sent an official petition to the Department of Agriculture saying, please adopt this. And 2 years later, after not having heard back from them, they issued this thing they called My Plate, which is four quadrants. And I'm not taking credit for it, but it looks remarkably similar to what
it
we sent.
It sure
them.
Does. Only yours is better.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, we don't need that little extra circle on the outside of milk products.
Well, yeah, they put in, we did not include dairy, and they put in a little extra circle to say, here's your glass of milk, but you really can't make a case that milk is in any way necessary. It's the number one source of saturated fat, and people who avoid milk have every bit as strong of bones as people who consume milk.
Okay, one more food question, and that is about fish, because a lot of people, when they're diagnosed with some sort of dementia, their doctors say you need to eat fish.
Right. Well, fish do have omega-3 fatty acids. Those are the good fats. That's true. Having said that, 70 to 85% of the fat in fish is not omega-3. It's a mixture of saturated fat and various forms of unsaturated fat. So fish also have a lot of contaminants in them. Tuna have a lot of mercury, and there are others as well, of course. I already mentioned the problems with shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
But fish, if you're eating fish muscle, which is what you're eating, it's a lot more like cow muscle than it is like broccoli. It's just not health food. So we recommend, if somebody wants to have good fats, there are traces of good fats in green leafy vegetables and beans. If you want to have a little bit more, you'll find them in walnuts, some soy products. If you want to go crazy, you can get exactly fish oil, but it's from plant-based sources. At any health food store, they'll sell you DHA capsules. I don't think anyone really needs it, but if you wanted them, it's there and in a much cleaner form than in fish.
Okay, very good. So that's the food portion, but there's a lot more that we can do to take care of our brains. And you talk about sleep and what happens when we're sleeping.
It's fascinating. You know, all day long you have experiences. You learn things, you have interactions, and sleep. Why do we sleep? Well, the brain's got to file things at some point. You've had all these experiences. They're piling up on your desk like so many file folders. When you go to sleep, your brain can make sense of things and sort of reset itself and file away your memories of the day so you can find them later, speaking metaphorically. The first half of the night, the brain emits what are called slow wave sleep brain waves, which we can measure with an EEG. That's when we're remembering and integrating memories. The second half of the night is REM sleep, rapid eye movement, when you're dreaming. And that's when the brain is integrating emotion. So if you're up all night, your memory will be poor, but your emotional control will be poor too. You'll be grumpy or giddy or switch back and forth between the two. So sleep is important. I encourage everyone to go to knock off at 10 o'clock, and you'll feel a whole lot better the next day.
I became a vegan a long time ago because I didn't want to kill animals, and I think we can learn so much from animals. And I really enjoyed the story where you talked about different mental exercises we can do and how I think it was a chimp or something that was better at doing this one particular thing than humans.
Yeah, this is in a lab in Kyoto, Japan, where a chimpanzee chimpanzees have this extremely remarkable memory capacity, particularly for immediate memory. And the way this test works is they have a TV screen. The chimp sits on a stool in front of the screen, and the numbers from 1 to 10 appear. But they just flash there for a second, and then they disappear, and they're replaced by blank squares. And your job is to touch the squares in numerical order. But the numbers are gone, and so it's just blank squares. So humans are okay. You know, if you flash the numbers from 1 to 10, and then the numbers disappear, and the squares are there. When the numbers disappear, you might remember the order they were in. Well, chimps can do that like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And a juvenile chimp can beat not only all the graduate students in the lab, but the world's memory expert, a man from England who could memorize a pack of cards in 30 seconds, came to compete with this juvenile chimp. and the chimp just wiped the floor with them.
It's crazy, and we can learn so much from these animals that many of them we're not treating very nicely.
Well, I have to say that the more we realize that animals deserve our respect, but we're also very different from them in many ways. We need to leave them alone, leave them off our plate, leave them out of laboratories. We can study what human beings need. And in my research work here at the Physicians Committee, we do a lot of research. We study human beings in ethical ways, and we obviously are not going to be using animals in what we do. And I think the more we focus on human beings, the better off we're going to be.
We have a lot to learn about ourselves. Now, what about exercise? That's important, too?
Yeah. Interesting study at the University of Illinois. They brought in a group of people up in years, and everyone had some memory issues. What they asked them to do was just to lace up their sneakers and go for a brisk walk 3 times a week, starting out with a 10-minute walk 3 times a week, then the next week, 15-minute walk, then the next week, 20, and then 25. They got them up to a 40-minute walk 3 times a week. And what they showed was that it actually reversed age-related brain shrinkage, particularly for the part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is the seat of memory. It increased the size of the hippocampus, but it also increased memory in organized tests, structured tests of memory. So why would it work? The reason it works, we believe, is because you're oxygenating the brain and you're getting nutrients to the brain in a way that you weren't doing before. Most people are sedentary. They're not oxygenating their brain very well, and we pay a price for it.
So basically we just have to eat some very simple plant foods, get some exercise, and life's pretty good.
Yeah, it really is. And I really encourage people to not fool around with it. Have fun with it. Go in a big way. At PCRM, we have a Kickstart program where for 21 days, you're going to do it all vegan, all the time, and we give you online support for free to do it. Every day, you get an email from Alicia Silverstone or another celebrity, and they say, hey, here's a menu for the day. Here's some recipes. Here's a cooking video you might like to watch. And people really enjoy it. We have it in English and Spanish, Mandarin, Japanese, it's in Japanese. It's also, we have one for people from India, and hundreds of thousands of people have done it, and it's good for your heart, it's good for your waistline, but it's good for your brain too.
Well, thank you, Dr. Barnard, for writing this book. Is there anything else you want to tell us about it or what PCRM is up to these days?
Well, I hope people go to our site, PCRM.org. That's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org. I hope you'll join us. I hope people will try this, but I have to also just say on a personal level, if I could turn back time and get my own father and my own mother and my grandparents on a healthy plant-based diet instead of the meaty diets that they did grow up on, I think that we could have reversed the aging that robbed them of so many years. Don't get me wrong, you're not going to live forever. But why age the brain prematurely? Why develop Alzheimer's disease if you don't have to? A generation ago, we thought heart attacks were just part of getting older. Well, we now know it's a disease that we can prevent and reverse. Alzheimer's should be thought of also as a target for prevention. Now is the time to put it to work.
Right. We should all live long, healthy, quality lives. And after about 120 or 30 or 150, who knows, we just fall asleep and move on.
Well, I'm going to die in a flaming inferno in the Monaco Formula One Grand Prix. It is 150 years old, something like that. I think I'm going to overcook the corner, and that'll be it.
Okay, well, I'll see you then. Okay, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, Dr. Barnard. Thanks for writing Power Foods for the Brain. I really enjoyed reading it.
Thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
Okay. Well, that was Dr. Barnard. I wanted to mention before we take a break some things that are going on in my town in New York City. So you may be familiar with Victoria Moran. I've had her on the program. She's a wonderful author. She's recently written Main Street Vegan and Charmed Life and a whole bunch of other books. Well, she'll be speaking at the 92nd Street Y on October 29th, next week. And you can find out more at 90secondwhy.org. It's $22 and up, and you'll learn all you need to know to get from here to green, glowing, and glorious in no time. So if you need some help or want to bring someone you love to get that quick kickstart in person, that might be a good event to go to. And then another one of my wonderful friends, Fran Costigan, she's been on the show, and she'll be back on November 5th. On Monday, November 4th, she'll be at Candle Cafe West, another fabulous restaurant in New York City, actually very close to the Progressive Radio Network studio. And she will be book signing from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on November 4th, Monday, November 4th, the day before she's on my program. So there you have it. All right, why don't we take a quick little break? And you can always send me an email with a question if you have one now or later, info@realmeals.org. Break. We'll be right back.